Welcome back to Robbinsdale Revisited. Grab your coffee, pull up a chair, and get comfortable, because today Pete and I are bringing you a historical deep dive. We're looking into the life of a prominent, wealthy, and brilliant woman who just happens to be another daughter of Andrew B. Robbins. I'm Crystal Boyd, a member of the prestigious Robbinsdale Historical Society.
And I'm Pete Ritchie, the president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Today, we are sorting through the life of Adelaide Robbins Gillette, her family, her high society marriage, her in-laws, her academic career, her poetry, and a bit about her son. I think this episode will give us a glance through what the Gilded Age looked like on this side of the Mississippi.
To understand Adelaide, you have to understand the family empire she was born into. If you've spent about 5 minutes in Hennepin County, you know the name Robbinsdale. And that isn't a coincidence. Adelaide was born on April 1st, 1881, in Willmar, Candiohi County, Minnesota. Her parents were Andrew Bonnie Robbins and Adelaide Walker Robbins.
Let's break down her father first. Andrew B. Robbins was a Civil War veteran who served in the 8th Minnesota Volunteer Infantry. After the war, he drove headfirst into business and politics. By the time he was 30, he was a Minnesota state senator. He served as the logging survey general for Minnesota, ran massive lumber and elevator operations, and in 1890, he purchased land northwest of Minneapolis, platted the village, planted hundreds of trees, built houses, and named the town after himself, Robbinsdale.
And don't sleep on her mother, also named Adelaide, Adelaide Walker Robbins, because she was an absolute force of nature. Her father died out west during the California Gold Rush, so when the Civil War broke out, at just 14 years old, she and her sister volunteered as nurses at a time when the Union needed them most.
After the war, she came to Minneapolis, became principal of Marcy School, married Andrew Robbins in 1869, moved to Willmar to build the town's very first two-story frame house, raised five daughters, Edith, Adelaide, Amy, Ruth, and Esther. Oh, and her brother, Thomas B. Walker, the legendary lumber baron who founded the Walker Arts Center. He helped create the Minneapolis Public Library, and at one time he was the 18th richest man in the world.
So when Adelaide Robbins came into the world in 1881, she wasn't just born into money, she was born into the absolute top tier of Minnesota's social, economic, and political aristocracy.
Let's talk about how the elite actually lived back then, because the local newspapers read like an Edith Wharton novel.
And it is pure, unadulterated flex culture. So let's look at a newspaper clipping from the Minneapolis Daily Times on Sunday, June 21st, 1896. The headline reads, "The tourists enjoy their first outing of the summer, Ein Land Party, Friday at the country home of Mrs. A.B. Robbins at Robbinsdale."
Right, so I'm going to try and say this again, but maybe, I mean, I know it's German, but it's Ein Land Party, which I think means picnic. It was an ultra-exclusive German-themed outdoor picnic for the Tourist Club of Minneapolis. The hostesses were Mrs. Robbins, Mrs. J.B. Phelps, Mrs. G.W. Tanner, and Mrs. E.E. Bailey.
And we have some details from the newspaper, so listen to this. It says, "Lunch was served at 1 o'clock at long tables in the dining room and on porch. The menu was written on pretty souvenir cards in German, and the cookery was in the same style. The piece de resistance was Brodtorten, a sweetmeat of difficult manufacture. The cards were illustrated with sketches of tourists, Kaiser Wilhelm, and Bismarck. During the afternoon, music was furnished by Miss Carrie Severance and Miss Adelaide Robbins."
I can honestly say I've never had a sweetmeat of difficult manufacture. Our hired kitchen staff slaved over this delicate European pastry for 18 hours so we could eat it on the porch while looking at sketches of Otto von Bismarck, is the rough translation of that, I think.
It sounds like a party. While regular working class mothers in Minneapolis were scrubbing laundry by hand on washboards, the Robbins family was hosting afternoon garden parties with hand-drawn souvenir cards of Prussian royalty, while 15-year-old Adelaide entertained the guests on the piano and violin.
Yeah, it shows you the sheer level of polish and cultural expectation placed on Adelaide from a young age. She wasn't just learning music as a hobby. She was being groomed as a leading lady of Twin Cities society.
And Adelaide received her preparatory education at East Minneapolis High School. And because she was a Robbins, the local newspapers covered her high school social calendar like it was breaking national news.
Yeah, and we have so many exact dates and names and locations from the 1890s that show her romance with her future husband, Ralph Perkins Gillette, starting right in high school.
Let's go back to Friday, May 28th, 1897. The Minneapolis Daily Times reported on an outdoor party thrown by Miss Roberta Pratt for the sophomore and freshman classes of Eastside High School. The article says, "The weather gods favored Miss Roberta Pratt last evening when she gave her al fresco reception. The beautiful lawn was lighted with Japanese lanterns and presented a pretty sight amidst the brilliant foliage. The very amusing farce, The Spirit of the 20th Century or The Coming Woman, was unusually well given by the following cast: Anna Crete, Jenny McCool, Adelaide Robbins, Roy Ellick, Ralph Gillette, Charles Cooper, and Robert Bernard."
So yeah, let's picture the scene. It's May 1897. The lawn is lit up by glowing paper Japanese lanterns. They built an outdoor stage right on the grass, screened it in with patriotic flags and bunting, and brought in the Apollo Mandolin Club to play dance music for 250 high school guests. That's bigger than any cake party I ever went to down in the woods.
And it sounds so fancy. And on the stage that night were 16-year-old Adelaide Robbins and 15-year-old Ralph Gillette acting together in a play called The Coming Woman. So you can practically feel the high school sparks flying under those Japanese lanterns.
All right, so we'll fast forward 1 year to Thursday, April 28th, 1898. It's senior class day for Eastside High School. And where does the senior class go? They charter a private omnibus and ride all the way out to the Robbins Mansion in Robbinsdale.
Ooh, a private omnibus.
Yeah, I'm guessing that was a Girling Warner bus that brought them out here.
Let's take a look at the senior class lineup from that day. They had the class historian was Adelaide Robbins. The class songster was her future husband, Ralph Perkins Gillette. The class prophet was Marguerite Huntley. The class poet, Claire Wyman. And the class fool, William Nightingale.
Oh, I would have loved to be the class songster, but I love that they had an official elected position called class fool in 1898. Shout out to William Nightingale, wherever you are in history.
And the following night, Friday, April 29th, 1898, the seniors held their grand graduation ball at the historic Wyndham Hotel in Minneapolis. Adelaide and Ralph were officially high school graduates, heading straight for the University of Minnesota together.
Right, and Adelaide and Ralph entered the University of Minnesota in the fall of 1898 as part of the class of 1902. Adelaide was an exceptional student specializing in philosophy, psychology, and modern languages.
And she also dominated campus theater. On Thursday, April 6th, 1899, the Minneapolis Daily Times reported on a major benefit production at the University of Minnesota Armory that was put on by the University Dramatic Club to raise money for the Athletic Association. They performed a double bill of farces called A Happy Pair and A Box of Monkeys.
And Adelaide played the lead aristocratic comedy role, Lady Guinevere Landpoor.
Can't you just see Adelaide really leaning into that role? Because she spent her whole life surrounded by wealthy aristocrats, so playing a British noblewoman named Lady Guinevere Landpoor at the University of Minnesota Armory was probably second nature to her.
Commencement week ran from Sunday, June 1st to Thursday, June 5th, 1902. It was a massive moment for Minnesota. The university graduated its largest class ever up to that point. The entire week was dedicated as a grand memorial to Governor John S. Pillsbury, the founder of the university, who had recently passed away.
Both Adelaide Robbins and Ralph Perkins Gillette received their Bachelor of Arts degrees side by side in that historic 1902 class. Ralph was a star member of the Chi Psi fraternity and prominent in the university athletics. They were young, brilliant, rich, deeply in love, and ready to plan the wedding of a decade.
And if you want absolute proof of how Minnesota elite flexed their wealth, Adelaide and Ralph's wedding on June 25th, 1903 at 8 p.m. is a gold standard.
The newspapers went crazy. The Minneapolis Daily Times and the Star Tribune both published massive front-page social write-ups on June 26, 1903. They dubbed it the Woodland Wedding and the most brilliant affair of the season.
And let's set the scene for how 250 guests even got there. Guests took the streetcar line out to the end of the track in Robbinsdale, where private horse-drawn carriages met them at the car, drove them through the winding country lanes to the Robbinsdale estate on Twin Lake. And I'd always heard that Andrew B. Robbins made sure that they sprayed the ground with water so the dust wouldn't get kicked up onto people's clothing before the wedding. And 250 must have been the capacity of the Robbins Mansion, because that seems to be the number of guests for events there.
It's a nice number. And this wedding sounds amazing. So listen to how the Star Tribune described the house transformation. They said, "The guests were ushered into an oak forest in miniature, with its fragrant suggestive odors of the woods intermingling with the scent of roses. The walls and ceiling of the music room were hidden beneath boughs of oak. The network of oak branches fell from the ceiling, covering the window. Twined in the branches, roses nodded their pink heads through the green." That sounds beautiful.
Well, I hope they didn't cut down one of the Robbins' oak groves in order to reconstruct it inside the house. So the music room at the altar, it was framed in oak boughs, lofty palms, pink hydrangeas, and white peonies tinted with pink rising all the way to the ceiling. The doorways and halls arched with oak boughs and ribbons, with giant hanging baskets of maidenhair ferns and white peonies suspended from the ceiling. Mantles and bookcases, they were heavily banked with sword ferns, feathery asparagus ferns, pink roses. The dining room had a bold red and green theme, giant green baskets filled with deep red peonies, flanked by red shaded candles in antique silver holders.
It is just so gorgeous. So let's talk about Adelaide's gown. She walked down the aisle alone, preceded by little flower girl Corinne Gray, who was wearing pink silk and scattered pink rose petals in her path. Adelaide wore a custom gown of white crepe de chine, fashioned in a princess silhouette with intricate shirrings. The bodice featured a deep pointed collar of delicate Irish crochet lace, also stitching across the yoke, and elbow-length sleeves with lace points extending over her long gloves.
And her train had bands of Irish crochet lace inserted in scalloped medallion designs radiating upward. She carried a shower bouquet of bridal wreath roses and maidenhair fern.
And guess what Ralph's wedding gift to her was? It was a custom sunburst brooch crafted from oval Mississippi freshwater pearls set around a massive center diamond.
Her sister Amy Robbins played the processional on her violin, while Miss Edgar Runyon played piano. Her sister Edith was maid of honor, while four little ribbon bearers, Louise and Delphine Gillette, alongside Ruth and Esther Robbins, stretched white silk ribbons through the study to form an aisle.
Interestingly, Adelaide's father, Andrew B. Robbins, was away in Arizona attending to urgent mining and land investments. So Ralph's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Louis S. Gillette, assisted Mrs. Robbins in receiving the 250 guests.
After an informal reception, the couple departed with a tan going-away gown and matching hat, setting up their summer residence after August 1st at Groveland Park, Lake Minnetonka.
By the early 1900s, Ralph and Adelaide were fully immersed in the Minneapolis High Society circuit. Ralph was appointed secretary and sales manager of the Minneapolis Steel and Machinery Company, working alongside his father, Louis S. Gillette, and his uncle, George M. Gillette. The social pages of the Star Tribune and Minneapolis Journal were constantly tracking Adelaide's teas and luncheons at 2842 Irving Avenue South. And here's a couple of them. On January 30th, 1910, Adelaide hosted an elaborate afternoon tea from 4 to 6 p.m. for her mother, Mrs. A.B. Robbins, and Mrs. Floyd Sterling Loomis, the mother of Adelaide and sister Ruth. And Thursday, May 16th, 1912, Adelaide hosted a multi-day reunion for her Pi Beta Phi sorority sisters, entertaining her visiting sisters Mrs. F.C. Rhoda, or Ruth Robbins, and Mrs. Scott, Esther Robbins, who had traveled in from Marmouth, North Dakota. In 1907, Adelaide even found time to take an Alaskan cruise with her young son, Louis.
Yeah, and imagine these teas go from 4 to 6 p.m., so when do you eat dinner? They had the mansion, they had social standing, a successful company, a young son named Louis Robbins Gillette, born around 1904, and deep family connections across Minnesota. Life looked absolutely impenetrable. And then came the afternoon of Friday, July 12th, 1912.
And this is a shocking and sudden tragedy.
Shortly after 4:30 p.m. on Friday, July 12, 1912, one of the most violent storms ever recorded by the Twin Cities Weather Bureau swept through Minneapolis. Winds hit a staggering 84 miles per hour. Roofs were blown off buildings. Heavy trees were uprooted. Barns collapsed in St. Paul, and property damages surpassed $100,000.
Ralph Gillette, just 30 years old, was out playing golf at the Interlochen Club with his friends, Dr. W.H. Card, who lived at 2640 Humboldt Avenue South, and E.S. Houston, living at 3112 Humboldt Avenue South. They were accompanied by two young caddies from Hopkins, the 10-year-old Joseph Nelson and 9-year-old Frank Sitchick.
Shortly before 6 p.m., the party was putting out on the green of hole number 4. Dr. Card hit a fantastic approach shot, and Ralph congratulated him as a heavy rain shower broke out. Ralph ran for the cover of a massive oak tree near the green.
Dr. Card called out to him, "You're wet already, Ralph. You might as well keep on playing." But Dr. Card holed out, and he, Houston, and the two caddies ran under the tree to join Ralph.
Seconds later, a blinding bolt of lightning struck the top of the tree.
Dr. Card later described the sensation. He said, "It seemed as if I had been hit on the top of the head with a sledgehammer, and I was trying to rise against a heavy weight that seemed to hold me down. I saw Mr. Gillette lying near me and all members of the party except Mr. Houston lying flat on the ground. I wondered why they were lying down to rest. Soon, I gained control of my faculties. I tried all artificial methods of respiration I knew on Mr. Gillette, but life was extinct."
The lightning bolt hit Ralph directly on the top of the head, traveled down his body, burned his shoes and his face, and leapt across to 10-year-old caddy Joe Nelson and knocked Dr. Card and Houston unconscious. Ralph died instantly.
9-year-old Frank Sitchick was thrown to the ground, but unharmed. He ran crying into the Interlochen clubhouse, asking if he could go home. Men ran out to retrieve Ralph's body and carry 10-year-old Joe Nelson inside, where two doctors worked on the unconscious boy through the night.
But here is the most heartbreaking twist of fate. At 7 p.m., Adelaide Gillette and Mrs. Card drove up to the Interlochen clubhouse. They had planned days in advance to meet their husbands at the club for dinner after their round of golf.
They walked into the building completely unaware that anything had happened, expecting a relaxed evening dinner, only to be met at the door with the news that Ralph was dead and doctors were battling to save a caddy's life in the next room.
Ralph's body was taken to his parents' residence at 40 Groveland Terrace. His funeral took place there on Monday, July 15, 1912, with a burial at Lakewood Cemetery.
The family immediately had to recall all printed wedding invitations for the lavish marriage of Ralph's sister, Marion Gillette, to George H. Anson of Montreal, which was set to take place the very next week. The entire high society community was left reeling.
Adelaide was a widow at just 31 years old with an 8-year-old son, Louis Robbins Gillette, but instead of retreating from the world, Adelaide showed incredible grit and independence.
To heal from the grief, she packed up her family and headed to Europe. On November 28, 1913, the Minneapolis Journal reported that a family party sailed from Boston aboard the steamer Canopic, heading through the Mediterranean. The traveling group included Adelaide, little Louis, her mother Mrs. A.B. Robbins, and her sisters Mrs. John R. Ware and Mrs. F.C. Rhoda.
Right, and that's Amy and Ruth, just in disguise with their husbands' names there. They spent the winter in Vienna, Austria, and toured the Mediterranean coast. Adelaide and little Louis returned to New York aboard a liner on March 18, 1914, staying at the Holland House before arriving home in Minneapolis on Saturday, March 21, 1914.
When she returned, Adelaide threw herself into higher education at the University of Minnesota. Just taking a look at her published scholarship, which was recorded in the 1924 volume Who's Who Among Minnesota Women, we see four interesting pieces. First, she published the psychological pamphlet, The Psychology of Music. Second, she authored the civic brochure, The Housing Laws of California, while she was spending winters on the West Coast in 1917. And while there, she also raised scholarship funds for the College Women's Club. The third thing is that she completed her master's thesis in economics, titled Railroad Securities as an Investment. And fourth, she became fluent in German, French, and Italian.
Definitely some ambition there. The Robbins household was deeply artistic. Adelaide's sister, Edith Robbins Daniel, became nationally recognized as a poet. In 1920, the major publishing house, Gin and Company, discovered Edith's poems and hired her to write music readers used by millions of children across the United States. Boston critics pronounced Edith the foremost writer of children's verse today.
And after Ralph's sudden death, Adelaide also turned to poetry as a way to process grief, loss, and spiritual renewal. Period literature reviews praised her work for its profound emotional restraint, quiet dignity, and graceful reflections on life after tragedy.
And here's a poem from Afterglow. Now the afterglow of evening slowly creeps across the yard. Show us that land, but in his afterglow, a realm too soft for earthly light to show. We end that silence as we should have done before, and the vows we pledged this evening we shall keep forevermore.
Oh, you can hear the raw emotion in those lines. The vows we pledge this evening, we shall keep forevermore. She was carrying that memory of Ralph with her through every decade that followed. Here's a couple more examples of her poetry. This one is called I Dare to Fly, a Kite in the Sky. I ride the sky in ecstasy of wings because a small boy sings of free high things. My strings are taut, so dear he holds me. His smile enfolds me. Buoyancy speeds us. A long line leads us in urgency of flight. The wee lad runs in rhythm with singing suns, whistling in elfin glee. Shrill tunes of fantasy. I was for this a paper toy, cherished by an eager boy. It was for this I dared to be a kite in the sky.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right, I have a favorite. Check this one out. Cause for divorce. Gordon was strong for holding a thought. Wife's appendix removal was too dearly bought. When she suffered from headache, he found her mistaken. With songful rehearsals, each evening was taken. He brought home the music, but never the bacon. Through long years of high C, her faith was unshaken. Bright thoughts of singing, just one alone, might not the end have disturbed the home. She might have endured the scant money he sent her, if he'd grown to be anything but a tenor. We're looking for a rhyme there.
She found it. She got there.
If he had grown to be anything but a tenor. This brings us to the part of the show where we talk about the sheer length of Adelaide's widowhood.
Ralph died on July 12, 1912. Adelaide passed away on July 25, 1965, at the age of 84 in Hennepin County, Minnesota. Pete, what's the math on that?
That's 53 years of merry widowhood. She lived more than five decades after Ralph's death.
Okay, and I'm going to get a little bit real right now. Adelaide was 31 years old when Ralph died. She was immensely wealthy, highly educated, fluent in French and Italian. She spent her winters on the California coast and her summers in Europe and on Lake Minnetonka. Are we really supposed to believe that in 53 years, not a single handsome European aristocrat or a wealthy California suitor tried to woo Adelaide Robbins Gillette?
You know, there had to be at least a few eligibles that may have been interested. Picture Adelaide sipping espresso on the French Riviera in 1914 or attending galas in Pasadena in 1917. You might think the men would be crawling out of the woodwork.
Yeah, she was quite a catch, but here's the Gilded Age reality. High society women of her standing had strict expectations. Remarrying meant potentially losing control of her independent estate, complicating her son's inheritance, or diluting the Robbinsdale Gillette family name.
So if Adelaide had romantic companions or intimate relationships, even those five decades, she kept them completely secret from the public eye. She signed every academic paper, civic brochure, and sorority registry as Mrs. Ralph P. Gillette until the day she died in 1965.
Now let's turn to Adelaide's son in historical records, news clippings, and legal documents.
He grew up spending his summers at the Robbins family estate in Robbinsdale with his grandmother, Mrs. A.B. Robbins, or Adelaide Robbins. It's interesting that she named her daughter after herself. Then they were living at 2842 Irving Avenue South in Minneapolis when he wasn't out here in Robbinsdale.
And like a lot of wealthy college kids in the 1920s, young Lewis was definitely a bit of a wild child.
Check out this headline from Minneapolis Star on Thursday, May 26, 1921. Reckless driving costs youth $25. L.R. Gillette, 2842 Irving Avenue South, student at the University of Minnesota, was fined $25 in traffic court this morning on a charge of reckless driving. Young Gillette, who is the son of Mrs. Ralph Gillette, was arrested for driving an automobile backward on University Avenue Southeast.
He drove an automobile entirely in reverse down University Avenue in broad daylight. Can you imagine Judge Thomas H. Salmon shaking his head while slapping a $25 fine on the grandson of Andrew B. Robbins?
Well, all I know is, was he speeding? I mean, he's going backwards. I guess that's enough to get you a ticket. $25 in 1921 was a lot of money to an average worker, but to a Gillette heir, it was pocket change.
Yeah. 3 years later, on April 6, 1924, the Minneapolis Journal published the full terms of his grandfather Louis S. Gillette's massive estate after he passed away in Natchez, Mississippi. The estate was valued at over $600,000, which would be tens of millions of dollars in today's money. The estate first went to the widow, Louise Gillette, for $100,000 plus the mansion at 40 Groveland Terrace. Also to son George L. Gillette for $150,000. Plus the daughters, Marion, Mrs. Piper, and Mrs. Burton. They received trust funds of $100,000 each. And finally, the grandson, Louis Robbins Gillette, received a direct $50,000 trust fund created specifically for him.
$50,000 in 1924 was roughly $900,000 in today's currency. At 20 years old, Louis was set up for life. Let's trace the story of Louis Robbins Gillette chronologically, picking up right where he comes into his own in the mid-1920s.
Right after he inherited that massive $50,000 trust fund from his grandfather's estate in April 1924, the 20-year-old Louis tied the knot just 3 months later.
On July 5, 1924, Louis Robbins Gillette married Eleanor Louise Dill at the home of her parents, Mr. and Mrs. G.J. Dill, down in Wabasha, Minnesota.
The Minneapolis Sunday Tribune covered the wedding on July 7, 1924, featuring Eleanor as a bride of the month. The paper made sure to note that Louis was the son of Mrs. Ralph P. Gillette. So right after finishing up at the University of Minnesota and receiving his trust fund, Louis started his own household with Eleanor.
Where did Eleanor and Louis set up their very first permanent residence?
They lived right here in the heart of town at 3952 West Broadway, Robbinsdale, Minnesota.
And they weren't just living there quietly. They were deeply plugged into local civic life. On Friday, May 6, 1932, the Minneapolis Star reported that Mrs. Louis R. Gillette hosted 16 guests at their Broadway home in honor of Gold Star Mothers of the Robbinsdale American Legion Auxiliary.
I love that detail. Eleanor was opening up their West Broadway home to host local veterans' mothers, showing how deeply integrated the Gillettes remained in Robbinsdale community life during the Great Depression. She was also active in the library club.
Yep, and if you flip through some of the library club scrapbooks, she appears in there, and, you know, she appears more than once. So I've seen her picture around, but I've never been able to put together that she was Louis Robbins Gillette's wife until just recently. So around this time, the next generation of the family arrived. Louis and Eleanor had a son carrying the family name, Louis Robbins Gillette Jr.
So another Louis.
Yep.
That brings us to July 1933, the height of the Great Depression, when the Century of Progress World's Fair opened in Chicago.
So on Tuesday, July 4th, 1933, the Minneapolis Star social section featured a write-up titled, "Motor Trips to Chicago Are Popular. Mr. and Mrs. Louis Gillette plan tour to the World's Fair. Mr. and Mrs. Louis Gillette, 3952 West Broadway, Robbinsdale, and their son, Louis Robbins Jr., and Mr. Gillette's mother, Mrs. Ralph Perkins Gillette, plan to leave next week for Chicago. They will be gone a week."
Picture that multi-generational road trip.
Packing up the automobile and driving across Wisconsin to Chicago for a week at the World's Fair.
That gives us such a complete human picture of three generations of the Robbins Gillette family living, hosting, and traveling together right out of Robbinsdale.
Adelaide Robbins Gillette lived out the rest of her long, remarkable life in Minnesota. She witnessed Robbinsdale transform from her father's quiet country village into a bustling modern suburb.
She passed away on July 25th, 1965, at the age of 84. She was laid to rest at Lakewood Cemetery in Minneapolis.
From playing violin at German picnics on Twin Lake in 1896, to acting in high school plays under Japanese lanterns, to enduring the sudden horror of the 1912 lightning strike, to publishing academic works and poetry, Adelaide Robbins Gillett was a true icon of the age. Strangely enough, the last home she owned at 46 Mary Lane in Edina had a backyard that bordered on the Interlochen golf course.
The golf course where Ralph was struck by lightning?
Yep, I guess she liked the view.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.
Oh, yeah. And to round us out, we have a little tidbit from Captain Billy's Whiz Bang of August 1922. It starts, "Not so at Robbinsdale. A salesman sold a bill of goods to one of our local merchants. They were returned as not satisfactory. The wholesale house undertook to collect anyway and drew a sight draft on the bank at the customer's town. The bank returned the draft unpaid. Then the house wrote to the village postmaster and asked if the merchant was good for the amount of the bill. The letter was returned okayed at the bottom. Next, the postmaster was asked to put the bill in the hands of a local lawyer for collection. The answer received by the wholesalers ran as follows.
The undersigned is the merchant on whom you tried to palm off your worthless junk. The undersigned is also the president of the bank that returned your draft. The undersigned is the postmaster to whom you wrote, and also the lawyer whom you tried to get to collect your bill. And if the undersigned were not also the pastor of the local church, the undersigned would tell you to go plumb to hell."